So I'm Tom Hunter, or old.tom.solo on Instagram is my Star Wars dedicated fan Instagram. And I've always been kind of a quiet Star Wars fan. You know, I mean, since I was a kid, I saw the movies and, you know, I was never overly into it until my wife actually kind of drugged me to Disney World with her family April of last year, so 2021. And I didn't grow up going to Disney World or anything, so I wasn't that excited about it. And we went to Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah.
It all changed. So, you know, I had seen the sequel trilogy films. I, like everyone else, you know, I honestly did not dislike them, but God, Galaxy's Edge is obviously based heavily in that time period. So
Outer Rim, isn't it?
Yeah. So walking around there and eat with the fanfare piped in through the audio system, and sort of just the, because it was height of COVID when we went, and you know, everything was very compartmentalized, so except for standing in line, surprisingly, but for rides. But you know, I'm walking through Galaxy's Edge, I feel like I'm on the set of a Star Wars film, which is something I've always wanted, right? As a, I think any Star Wars fan would want. And there's, you know, the people that work there, the employees are walking around, they're dressed in the appropriate garb, they have their appropriate, you know, terminology and the sayings they use, and you're just absolutely immersed in this environment. And I turn the corner and I see the Millennium Falcon. And I get goosebumps talking about this to you, because it was immediately, I'm 7 years old and the prequel trilogy is out, right? And I remember being so excited about that in the late 90s and stuff. And I was just like, wow. And I immediately reverted to this sense of remembering what it was like to be a new Star Wars fan. And I remember the first Power of the Force figure I ever got was Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker. And I'm still on the hunt for a Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker in 6-inch scale. So if you have any suggestions or links or anything that would cost $300, that would be great.
Yeah.
But, you know, then the next step was, well, if you get in line for Smuggler's Run and wait an eternity, you get to fly in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. And I was like, I don't care how long the wait is. I'll be here 2 days. I get to fly the most recognizable spacecraft in all of Star Wars, right? I think the only difference would be if I, you know, got to pilot a TIE fighter or an X-Wing or something, right? Like, it was insane. So I immediately dove head over heels into, you know, anything I could get my hands on. And it kind of just dragged it back from roughly the late 90s to 2021. And I started buying the Legends books. And I think the first action figure I bought recently was the Deluxe, Black Series Deluxe Boba Fett, because Boba Fett's always been my favorite character.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, I wonder how many other of these action figures they make. Well, then it was over, right? I found out that they'd been making these for quite some time. And that's really what begun the collection. And I thought, you know, I'll get a few key characters and I'll have them on display in my office, and it'll be cool to just be working throughout the day as I am working remotely. And they'll be there, you know, it's kind of an homage to my Star Wars fandom. Mm-hmm. And then I made the mistake of getting on Instagram and started looking up people such as yourself at Red Flare Models, and uncovered an entire subculture of not only collectors, but toy photographers, which I love. I've always had a penchant for photography. I am a combat veteran. I did one tour of duty in Iraq and two in Afghanistan with the United States Army Infantry. And I was not a combat photographer, but I had a camera on me at all times. So it's something that I've always loved to do. And I've lost that. I've lost that since I got out of the Army in 2008. And I've found it again. And I can collect Star Wars action figures, and I can create content and build worlds, right, off of suggestions and videos, like people such as yourself and, you know, the other folks that I mentioned earlier in our conversation. I think they're up in the Netherlands somewhere.
Yeah.
Incredible work. Right. And it inspires you to really
pack balls in Italy. You got Jan, who we do some of his work with, and he's up in Finland.
Finland, maybe it is. Yeah.
Trooper Nerd. He lives down the road. Right. From me, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He does my photography. So.
You've got a pro coming in.
So I know that, you know, the kind of what you're talking about is mm-hmm. I had the same thing when I started getting into it a few years ago. It was like I immersed myself, and suddenly, like, there's this whole plethora of stuff.
Yeah.
And you go, well, I hadn't realized that people are you know, creating these scenes and photographing them and putting kind of, you know, little flashbangs to make explosions.
Right.
And
yeah. I mean, the possibilities, much like my introduction to the Galaxy's Edge portion of Hollywood Studios, is endless. And the community, as much as Star Wars fans, you know, kind of eat themselves with opinions, the community is also endless, but it's also very supportive as well. So when I first started out, I only had an iPhone and a couple action figures, and I would post them to an Instagram. My wife is social media savvy, me not so much. And she was like, you know, you can create a separate account and just post strictly Star Wars stuff here. And then you can have your other account where, you know, you don't post anything anyway, so it doesn't matter. And I said, oh, okay. So I started old.tom.solo on a whim. I just needed some name that rang true across the universe. And since then, I've upgraded my camera, and I've learned how to work with different foam core boards and styrofoam and weathering techniques and paints to buy and, you know, cheap brushes versus really, really good artistic acrylic brushes and things like that. And it's been an extremely helpful hobby to deal with a lot of something that I didn't know was missing in my life. Now, it is expensive, as you had mentioned, but it gives me the ability to create.
Yeah.
It gives me the ability to be creative, but it also inspires me to support others. Yeah. And when I say that, there are individuals worldwide that I follow on social media and that follow me. I'm sure you can relate to this. Mm-hmm. You know, and they post things around the clock. I mean, you know, we're on a 24-hour time cycle around the globe. So at any time I can open up my Instagram account and I can find someone in Spain. I can find someone in China, Taiwan, Australia, New Zealand, India, posting Star Wars content. Yeah. And I always try my best to if they're not getting a lot of traction on their post, or if they're not, you know, or if they appear to be like newer to the hobby, I always try to positively reinforce what it is that they're doing, because I want to see more of it. I want to see people grow. I want to see people get better. And just like me, right? Like, I mean, if the first couple posts I have, I look back on them and go, oof, you know, I could have done a little bit better. And now, you know, I mean, I'm not blowing up the trending scales or anything, but the content that I can post and the pictures that I'm creating are much, much better. So I know that
I find that. Yeah. I mean, I constantly learn every single day, you know, I'm being asked to do more and more stuff, you know, paint this head or do this diorama or create this new creature. And it's like, I'm constantly pushing myself.
Yeah.
And I find that, you know, the dios that I did last year compared to what I'm doing now are completely different, right?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and I know in a year's time I'm going to be better, but I try to do the best that I can, you know. Yeah. As you say, it's a constant evolution, but you learn from others. You know, there's so many YouTube videos out there about techniques, about, you know, texturing, weathering, as you say, right. You know, and then you learn, you know, do you buy this set of paints from this brand or this one?
Right.
You
that's
know?
Enough. Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't just stop when Hasbro or Mafex or SH Figure Arts sends you a box. That is not where it stops. That's where it starts. And it is up to you to continue to expand upon what they have only baselined for you. And I think that the people that are the best at it are they just have this creative motor inside of them that I don't think that I have, and I'm not disenfranchised due to that fact, but it's amazing to see what they can do, and it's inspiring. And I think that I'm not a filmmaker, I'm not, you know, anything like that, but I get inspired when I see someone like the Black Series account on Instagram. And he's like, yeah, I got a simple smoke bomb and one action figure and set it up in my backyard in California or wherever they're from. And this is the effect that I got.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I would have never have thought of that. And without a behind the scenes, which sometimes the behind the scenes are more intriguing than the actual photos. Without the behind the scenes, you lose that inspiration.
Yeah.
Right. Because you'll never understand how someone achieved, you know, this explosion. Like, would you work for, you know, ILM, or are you that, you know, that skilled digitally? No, you know, I bought a cheap firework and set it off in a pile of dust. Now we've got Obi-Wan, you know, fighting Grievous with special effects. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's consumed a good portion of my life. Not to my wife's happiness, but we compromise. And
I mean, do you do a lot of post-production as well, or do you just do a minimal amount?
So I try to do a little bit, right? I mean, most of the shooting I've done lately is indoors because the weather, has been cold. And also because I'm in the process of, you know, building worlds, like I'd said before, much thanks to you, getting started there.
Don't put blame on you, right?
I will go in and use Photoshop, but I don't have a laptop. I don't have a giant photo editing PC. My photo editing skills are very minor. In community college, I took a graphic design course, like that's the extent of it, like very basic. So I have an iPad, and which I'm actually speaking to you on right now, and I have just Photoshop Express.
Yeah.
So I'll go in there and I'll mess with things, and they have preset filters. But I feel like the more and more I get into this, the more I'm picking a filter, but then going in and manually adjusting everything myself because of the look I'm trying to achieve.
Yeah.
So yeah, a bit, all lightsaber stuff, you know, obviously needs to be edited or it doesn't look right. But, you know, and there was an app out there when I first got started where a gentleman on Instagram had designed this app, and it's just background effects. It's very, it's not clunky. It's actually very streamlined, but it's very basic. And you know, he just has a simple lightsaber effect that is a white line that you can adjust and add blur and color to, and superimposing that over, you know, a hilt or an actual lightsaber blade has worked out fairly well for some of the photos that I've done. And of course, lighting, right?
Yeah,
which is something I don't think I'll ever fully comprehend how these people light their subjects the way that they do, because they always look so outstanding. But it's a learning.
I think you need, you know, as you say, it's you learn these things continually, but there's always going to be somebody that you learn from.
Oh yeah, Yes. So. Yeah, I'm a very small fish in a very large pond when it comes to talent and skill. However, it has not stopped me from, like you said, learning, but also creating as well. And I think that that is really the main reason why I do this, is because I like to be creative. I like to create and I like to learn. So it's been extremely helpful in that aspect.
And your scenes, and you know, I know we talked about some of the stuff offline before we started the call, but you know, do you create pieces that you can use time and time again in different scenarios and different, you know, like different wall panels? I know some of the panels I've designed, I've done them two-sided, and they look different on either side. So I can photograph them in a Tatooine scene, but I can flip them around and I can have them a kind of, you know, different effect on different scenes.
I can actually show you some of the stuff if you want to see it.
Yeah, please. So
I feel bad about this, but I actually took this design off of why can I never remember? He's another producer of 1/12 scale props, and I can't ever remember their handle. I always remember Red Flare because that's pretty simple to remember. But Dagobah Customs has.
Yeah. We got some good stuff.
Yeah. So he had a set piece that was smaller in scale called Smuggler's Alley. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, that's so cool. Like, how did he make that? And I was just kind of looking at it, and he's actually 3D scanned it and is able to print these in PLA.
Yeah.
And sell them for, you know, more money than I'm willing to spend on them. But sorry, I'm just trying to get some of this stuff up here and move my giant Hasbro Pulse custom TIE fighter that I'm working on. So Smuggler's Alley, let me turn the camera around. There we go. I think I messed that up. There we go.
Yep.
So this is the main set piece that I use.
Okay.
And it's based strictly off his design. And then you can see we have a little
Flare
model homage there. And the vents as well. So so I increased the scale so that it's more of a backdrop piece. And then I added the base, sanded it down to give it some contour, and then just added some, you know, minor lines and things of that nature. But it's so two-dimensional that it can only really be shot, you know, straight on or slightly to an angle. So it kind of loses the depth of field that you would get with an angular piece. So I created this, which is much larger than I had intended, which is simply just a corner piece of foam cut down on an angle, sort of Star Wars looking building, but open in the top. And then we have a doorway with some vents, some more Red Flare swag there, and obviously the front.
Yeah.
Work in progress, of course, but these are the set pieces that I try and deal with. And then obviously just a very quick throw together archway.
Yeah.
Almost always desert, simply because it's the easiest to paint up and work with, I feel. But I've also created a very large diorama base that has consumed the majority of my office, where I stage and shoot indoor. So they're always ongoing. It'll just hit me, this is what I need, and I'll try and build it, or I'll see something in, you know, one of the animated series, a building or something, you know, how do I recreate that? Is there original render art online? Most times there is. Can I build the Bounty Hunter's hideaway? Probably. Do you have the material? Do you have the time? Yes. Yes to material, no to time. So I try to build them as interchangeable as possible, so that no set piece appears the same when you're shooting, but it takes up so much room and they always end up larger than I intend. So I do run out of room sometimes.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling well. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've got, you know, panels and elements and stuff, but also because of, you know, custom work and things that I'm doing, you know, there's always a something on the floor of the office or whatever, or the workshop, you know, just trying to get finished, or it's,
right,
you know, and waiting for the paint to dry, or the, you know, the plaster to cure or something like that, you know, and you're stepping over it,
right,
trying to avoid. Yeah. And then, you know, the next day is Amazon will be delivering some more foam board or something like that, you know. It's like, right, what's in this today, you know? So yeah, with lockdown, you know, there's been an awful lot more packages being delivered. And it is just to say, you know, you kind of, it's curious. I mean, I'm buying stuff continually from various places like you. I've ordered some stuff from Hasbro directly because I needed new figures, and then I'm happy with the head sculpt. So we go off and, you know, design a new head sculpt.
Right.
And you know, just, you know, spending a bit more time trying to get that movie accurate, you know, thing. So as I say, those panels were Galaxy Edge, you know, we took a lot of reference material, trying to make them as close as we could.
Well, it's like when I received them in the mail, you know, I was like, okay, wow. Well, I didn't expect them to be like a primer gray, the resin gray, but I also didn't expect a level of detail, right? So it states highly detailed. Sure. I don't know who Red Flare Models is. I know Neil Wooding because I've seen his YouTube videos, right? That's the only reference I have. And then you get this thing, you're like, oh, I literally saw this 3 months ago when I was in the park. And now it's scaled to the same size as my action figures, and it's perfectly detailed, and it's like, this is awesome, you know, like, okay, how do I paint this up to look like either the reference photo that you provided, or maybe even something that would stand out even more, right?
Well, you might have even had the photo yourself, you might have taken a photo of it, so you got to
probably get
a different angle, right?
That's what I did when I was walking around. I would take pictures of the large doorways and the door frames and the walls and the paint schemes and how everything is very worn. Everything is very lived in. Everything is very rustic, right? So that's what's great about learning this, is that unless you're really doing like a very institutional scene, so Death Star, Star Destroyer, right? With the GTP panels, which are, you know, have gone the way of the dodo, but, you know, it can be messed up and still look good. You can completely ruin an idea that you had, throw it in a corner, place it in the background somewhere in a shot, and it works because it is that. And that is why I think a lot of folks choose to use that Tatooine theme, that Jeddah theme, you know, those desert, desolate, almost not post-apocalyptic, but you know, just those warm areas, because you don't have to be a perfectionist in order to get that shot, right? Like you have it's like this, like I've created this little prop out of just some plastic that I had laying around. I don't know if you can see that, but
yeah.
I was like, what does that look like? I was like, you know, that kind of looks like, you know, a speeder engine that someone had left around. So I glued two pieces of plastic together, painted it up, and there you go.
Yeah.
It did turn out exactly how I wanted it to. It could be better, but if it's not in focus, it looks awesome, you know?
I mean, my big project at the moment actually is on a personal level. I've got one of my neighbors was just throwing out an old RC helicopter, you know, no motor or anything, just the shell. And I went, I'm going to have that, you know? And so, you know, I've cut off the tail section and I've started to kind of, you know, I bought sheets of plastic card and I'm starting to kind of, you know, stick it all together, but I've got a box of stuff, you know, as you say, you just got all these bits and pieces and I'm gluing them to it. And it would work with, you know, 18 scale, but it's fine for 12th.
Right.
So, you know, the 6-inch figures is great, and I'm going to be, you know, building a kind of, you know, and it is long. It's about 3 feet long, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and that's probably to scale, even if you use it as a backdrop piece or a focal point, right? I mean, I think that the sort of greebly world of just kind of kit bashing and creating something out of absolutely nothing is so astounding to me, simply because you look at these things, you go, oh, wow, that's really cool. Like, where did you buy that? And then they'll post a video of them or a slide presentation or just photos of the process and how they built it. And you're like, oh, this is just, you know, an Ultramarine Spitfire model kit that's been placed on top of, you know, some discarded laundry detergent, you know, thing. You're like, yes, oh my God, it looks like so crazy. But then you read about the original models and the original sets that they built at Lucasfilm, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man. So it's all on brand for
I mean, the original movies had, you know, the original first movie, you know, had such a little budget that, you know, they had to just find whatever. I mean, you know, they were going through skips and pulling out just anything they could find in order to kind of, you know, put pipe work on the walls of the Falcon or whatever, you know. And, you know, the model kits, as I say, old tank parts and everything we used in it, you know, and now you can't buy those tank parts. So people have digitally created them, recreated them. So even if you buy the, you know, the movie grade quality Falcon, people are buying so many aftermarket parts for it as well, just because even that quality of kit is still not 100%, you know, matching the movie. You know,
it's really crazy to think about, like how it was basically a bunch of guys trash picking in California, right, or going to yard sales, and they created something iconic out of what was essentially junk. And I think people like you and myself that are into this hobby can understand that quite well as the junk.
So that's the problem as well, is like keeping the boxes of junk and saying, I need that, you know, two years later, you know.
Do like a 90-day purge and I'll go, all right, am I ever going to use this? I haven't used it yet. And then I'll Google and see if anyone else has used it for anything. And if the answer is generally no, I'm like, all right, that's going, you know, because I have to walk around in here, you know, so yeah, it does get messy. But yeah, I mean, that's basically it. I mean, I you know, I'll continue to collect figures where I can find them. I've gone down some very odd, very sketchy, retail avenues to pick up like loose figures for cheap, you know, like the Thrawn that I have, I got for like $8, but it was just like a loose figure. But I don't keep my figures in box mostly. I open them most of the time because I do enjoy photographing them. Some of them I do keep in box. For example, the Din Djarin child helmetless exclusive for Target. I have that. I don't like the likeness of, you know, the actor. So I just keep that in the box. I mean,
yeah,
maybe I'll open it someday, but, or if I ever get into, you know, head sculpting, I can make a better version of that. But again, all in due time. So
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, when we first launched like things like the Vulpix, you know, the Crystal Foxes,
I
couldn't keep up with the sales on that because it was just like, you know, it was one of those things where you just couldn't buy it, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, it was like, it didn't even have an inkling of how popular that would be. I mean, it was like, you know, suddenly it was like people were ordering and we were out of stock, and it was like, no, we're having to do another production run. We were out of stock again. And it was like, oh my God, you know, how popular is this? And then it got dead for about a month. Then suddenly it resurged on Instagram again, and we would get, you know, but it was like, yes, I mean, Hasbro and, you know, Hot Toys and everybody, they're keeping up with stuff, but they're mainly focusing on the figures, and there's very few kind of all of the other little bits, you know. So
yeah,
the lizards and, you know, the scurriers and stuff have all been
That's a fantastic intro to sort of just the universe of, you know, not only Black Series but Vintage Collection. You know, I know that you sell things in different scales for people that collect either, or some people collect both. Yeah. Rich people, I suppose. But you know, I think that that's such a cool idea, because, you know, there are, these things do exist in the Star Wars universe, and you never see them in the photos unless it's signed, it's kind of got the red flare stamp on there, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
You've got the larger scale creatures like the Dewback Black Series and things like that, but you don't have, you know, you can throw two or three, like you call them, scurriers into the foreground of a photo, and it becomes all that more realistic looking. I think that it's an awesome way to kind of tie that in.
Yeah, I mean, that...
That's awesome.
That's a big thing, right? So yeah, there's now three poses of this. It's not actually on the website yet, but that's okay. That's almost a solid lump of resin. I mean,
this is so cool.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what's Legends, I think it is, isn't it? It's like, okay, you know, the Veermock is, you know, it's one of those kind of, people have said, look, you know, just go ahead and do it. The thing is, getting to a larger scale on the printer, you know, from resin to PLA, there is that jump. So you can do bigger creatures and some of the bigger stuff. It's like, we're looking at it, and it's just such an enormous effort to produce. It then pushes the price out, you know. That was probably I think it was an 18-hour print or something. You know, and you know, with PLA you can go large scale. In fact, you know, we got asked by somebody to do a 1:1 scale Oki Poki, you know, which is the little kind of the little rat creatures like these mm-hmm. the funny hair. It's the,
oh, okay,
and we did a full scale version of that.
How long did that take to print?
Yeah, long enough. I think that was about a 3-day print on a PLA machine, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
But the guy, you know, was adding real hair to it, you know.
Right.
And it sat over a foot tall. I mean, it was wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
But it was just like, you know, it was just, so we're doing odd occasional kind of, you know, custom pieces, and people are asking us to do bigger creatures. That's where the Narglatch came from, is somebody asked us to do the Narglatch, and it's like, okay, we'll produce that, but we're going to produce it in smaller scale as well as larger scale.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tackle that at 1/6 scale, because I just, you know, the size of it would just be fun, you know, too big.
Yeah, that's something I haven't dipped my toes into yet, and I feel like it's coming soon. The Hot Toys 1/6 scales. When I was a kid, I used to collect a lot of 1/6 scale soldiers, specifically the Dragon models, World War II. Obsessed with World War II as a child. Don't ask me why, it just happened. But, you know, I used to collect those, and I remember, you know, they're 12 inches tall, and just the Hot Toy stuff is so accurate in almost every way. I mean, the facial realism, the costume, the equipment, you know, I mean, they're always throwing these little things in there. Like the Darth Vader one that I was looking at has like the light boxes on his,
on his chest,
you know, on his uniform and his belt. Yeah. Light up. Like, well, how cool is that? You know, like, I mean, could I do that to a Black Series figure? without completely destroying it.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's like, they have other lines of expanded universe stuff, though. Like the Mythos Obi-Wan will probably be the first Hot Toys collectible that I buy because it's just such a cool concept, right? Like he's got his Clone Wars armor on his back. He's obviously in Tatooine, but he's got his little moisture evaporator on the pack. You know, he's out there. He's not established yet. Yeah. Maybe he dropped Luke off and he's trying to find a place to hole up. But, you know, it looks like the original actor. Why can't I remember his name? Bridge over the River Kwai. It looks like him. And I'm like, that's such a cool concept, right? Like this mythos concept that people, I don't think I really even grasp it entirely.
You're talking about Ewan McGregor or you're talking about?
No. The original Obi-Wan from A New Hope. Who's that actor? He's one of my favorite.
Sir Aaron, I've forgotten as well. My mental block.
So yeah, pulling up IMDb. Hold on. I'm not letting this die or it's going to kill me.
If I don't get this right quickly, it's on the website.
Yeah, I mean, he's British, so you're already down a strike.
Oh, goodness. There we are.
There we are.
Oh, yeah. I beat you to it.
Yeah. Yes. So I remember seeing him. My dad's a huge, you know, war film buff, you know, so like I saw him in Bridge Over the River Kwai, which is remains one of my favorite films, and he's a commander in that. And then he plays such a reduced role in Star Wars, but to watch the behind the scenes documentary that came out in like the late 90s, he was kind of the veteran actor, right, that kept everybody on board and kept it professional while all these young kids are goofing off and stuff. And then they just like recreate him in this sort of mythos genre. And I'm like, dude, that's such a cool concept. Like, I want to own that, you know, I want to own a piece of this. I don't expect it to go hand in hand with the upcoming, you know, Kenobi series on Disney Plus, but I don't care. You know, it's just kind of another avenue of Star Wars that no one really thinks about. And that's really the coolest part about Star Wars, I think, is that when, you know, The Mandalorian came out, that, especially in the States, got a lot of traction, right? Here's this.
Same here.
Okay. So, like, this badass guy, kind of like a Boba Fett type, so automatically I'm in, right? You know, and you don't know anything about Mandalorians if you didn't watch Clone Wars, which I hadn't at that point. And you don't know anything about bounty hunting, really, outside of, you know, the scum of the universe.
Yeah,
you know?
A few scenes in the movies.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've started this whole sort of expanded universe in that sense. And then you get the timeline, right, at the end of season two, when you have Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker show up.
Yeah.
And no one's expecting that, right? Like, people think maybe it's anybody but him, because, you know, Mark Hamill is obviously not, you know, like 33 anymore. And he just kicks so much ass. And we never get to see that really in the original trilogy. Right. We never get to see what it would look like. Luke Skywalker, full potential Jedi Knight. And that really, I think, kind of sparked the reintroduction. But it was definitely the Galaxy's Edge visit that tipped the scale for me.
Yeah. It was insane. Yeah. So what are you working on at the moment then, apart from that kind of scene? Is it a particular scene from a movie, or is it something that you're just trying to create for your own, you know?
So my mother-in-law, who is an enormous Disney fan, you know, loves the fact that I love Star Wars now, and obviously I'm willing to go to back to Disney, not necessarily the Magic Kingdom, but certainly Hollywood Studios. So she's bought me, or she found the First Order TIE Fighter, which was available, I guess, for retail a while back, and lost steam due to the, you know, the unfortunate ending of the sequel trilogy. For some, I still enjoy it quite a bit, but you know, I'm not big on the sequel trilogy. So essentially, what I am doing, and I will get the other panel here, is I am taking the First Order TIE Fighter that Hasbro produced, and I am modifying it to be a... Imperial TIE Fighter.
Okay.
So I've just repainted most of it, and obviously it's not put together, so don't judge me. No finished product. But mostly I've just repainted it, but I've taken the entire thing apart, even up to and including the cockpit. So
yeah,
I don't have a good light, but...
Is the cockpit lit in that one as well, isn't it? It's got a...
No, there's no light. There's no light. It's just the back window, because the First Order TIE Fighter is two-seated versus one. Okay. But I've gone in and redone all the detail of the cockpit. So all of the little red and white lights are all hand-painted by me. The upholstery on the seating, the, you know, everything is... gray instead of black, has been turned to black instead of gray, so on and so forth. And that's really consuming the majority of my time currently, because it is massive. But, you know, again, I had seen someone else do it, and I just took what they did and tried my best to sort of recreate it, not 100%, because I don't like to take things and recreate them 100% and kind of stamp it as my own. I don't think that's necessarily cool. So I just threw my own flair on it, and you know, I'll hang it from the ceiling. I'll put it in the background of a photo. I will probably end up adding lights to it, you know, which is another avenue I still need to explore. But it's been time consuming, but it's been fun. And, you know, the original toy was not very well detailed, and the paint apps were very dire, and the sort of just the material was very glossy and very manufactured. So even just throwing some acrylic paint on it has brought it back to life. And it's really just like a custom piece now that I don't think anybody would necessarily buy, because the price tag would be astronomical, but now I have it, right? So it's something I can put in photos. It's something that I can showcase in my office, not in the home, never in the common areas. I feel like from Beauty and the Beast, right? No one goes in the West Wing. But, you know, I can showcase it to my friends that are into it, you know, or something like that. But my mother-in-law is like my biggest supporter. She thinks, she's like, you know, she's like, oh my God, that doesn't look anything like what we bought you. You should go work for Disney. I'm like, hey, do you have a contact? I would love to. Right? Like,
that's it. It's like, I'm the same. It's like, I really want to get hired by, you know, Pinewood or, you know, elsewhere.
Right.
Or,
So, yeah, I mean, it's that's what I'm working on currently. And then I think I had mentioned this before. I want to try and build, you know, not interior, exterior, but certainly exterior, bounty hunter kind of hangout from Clone Wars. And then, you know, really what I'm trying to do is build more like you have, which are just walls where I can just place them, you know, create depth, and then fire away, right? Shift lighting, fire away. And then I want to start working on backdrops as well. I find that shooting indoors is a little bit more my speed these days. Not against going out and laying down in the mud to get a good shot, but you know, I've worked in the corporate sector for like 10 years now, and I'm not a soldier anymore. So I'm not necessarily willing to bleed for my art, as they say.
Yeah. Apart from the scalpel or two, right?
Well, yeah, the X-Acto knife slip. Yeah. Very good.
I remember years ago I was working away, and I dropped it into my leg, and it just stuck in my leg, you know, and I was sitting there going, okay, maybe I should pull it out. Ruined a good pair of jeans as well.
Right. Yeah. Nothing a few stitches can't fix on either the denim or the skin.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the, as you say, these are the things. I mean, I, that's why I started to kind of dabble around with, you know, the lighted wall panels and things. It's like, mm-hmm. to me, I like to play around with a little bit of LEDs and stuff and lighting. But I hadn't really seen kind of, you know, the light kind of, you know, you go, you'd see some of the scenes in some of the cartoons or whatever, and you see, you know, lots of glowing neon and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And even in
cities, you
know, Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian, you saw some of that, right? And you think, well, you know, you've got the, you know, the cantina scenes where you've got the video screens and playing kind of robot soccer or football, right, or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, think, well, you know, it'd just be great to have something up on the wall, but it's like, you don't see any of that, you know? And so, no. You know, for us, it's like, you know, as I say, you know, you get Sancrawler Customs are doing, you know, the thrones, or they're doing sceneries in the bar. And it's like, for us, we wanted to do some other stuff. So, you know, the kit bash and the greeblies and the wall panels, yes. and the signage is something for us, I think, you know, then can be adapted. So you can put your own, you know, spin on it.
Right.
You know, and you can create your own kind of design, or we're just giving you the raw material.
Yeah, I feel props in scale to the effect that they are highly detailed, are, and of course, well painted, you know, which is trial and error for me. But I feel as though without that, you're essentially just taking a photograph of a toy. Yeah. Whereas with the props, you can take your little pieces, your diorama pieces, and your world builds, and throw one prop in there. And now it's no longer a photo of a toy. It's a scene from a film. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist in film, but it's what it looks like. And to me, that's incredible. And that expands upon, again, the expanded universe of Star Wars, what you don't see, which is really the kind of mystery behind the whole saga, right? Is, okay, well, what's the time frame between episodes 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 3 and 4, you know, so on and so forth. And then you have, oh, The Mandalorian takes place between, you know, the end of episode 6, so Empire, or the, you know, Return of the Jedi, and the sequel trilogy. Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
And then you've got Rogue One and Solo and all the other things that just fit into that. You know, right. You know, and you think that they've just, you know, expanded a little bit more. And it's like, okay, now I can kind of follow that thread, you know, and I can design something that way. You know, the industrial complex in Solo, it's like you can do the bridge, right. You know, with the, right. The, you know, the speeder bike or the speeder chase. You know, and there's a different speeder bike, and there's a different, you know,
right.
Solo is flying a different speeder, you know, and it's like, ooh, you know.
But I think, like you, I do tend to pay more attention, not on the first view, on the second view. So if I see a movie, Star Wars specifically, in theaters, and then I watch it again at home, I'm paying more attention to the background, right? Especially now that I'm into this. What's going on back there? Like, how can I really bring my photos to life? And that is through the use of, you know, greeblies, kit bash, stuff like that, you know, like even the signage that I've seen that you've put out, like that's going to take off. I mean, no one has that, right? And certainly Hasbro's not going to make that for, you know, this lowly bunch of rabble that are just collecting foam and painting it, right? So yeah. You know, the masses are fine with what they're getting. And then you have the people that pay attention to detail, the people that are consumed by it and really want to create something of their own that is in line with something that already exists. And I really like that about this hobby. And I really appreciate that there are people like you out there that have the foresight and the ability to create these things and not only showcase them, but also make them available to the consumer, because it really allows people like myself, even just starting out, to make it great and continue to build on that. I think one of the first things I had ever asked you was either in an email or
on Insta. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, how do you do your cables on your dioramas. Like, that looks so good.
Yeah.
It would just bring it to life. Like, there's electricity flowing through that. It's going somewhere. You don't know where it goes. You don't know what it controls. But now that it's there, it's not just a wall. Now it's a wall with purpose. And it's like, okay, cool. So I just figured out how to do it and on my own with, the, you know, obviously the guidance from you, but yeah. I just found the materials on my own. And I was like, this looks like kind of what Neil was calling whatever. I'll get this.
Yeah.
Used it, added it. And I was like,
usually reels of just electrical table or, you know, some of them are very thin, like, you can get them in kind of hobby shops where people put beads on strings.
Yeah, for jewelry making.
Yeah. I mean, it's just anything that is flexible enough that looks like it is either stiff, because some of the wire is stiff and it looks a bit too mechanical, whereas some of that rubberized material is a lot more flexible and it bows like it would do if it was just, you know, hanging as a cable. But
yeah,
you know, I think just play around anything, right?
And that's exactly right, because the brackets that you had made to kind of guide the wire around was what I was struggling with.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if you had just cut them and twisted them, which is what I ended up doing. And then you explained that that's exactly what you did. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm not, you know, insane. And, you know, that was the first diorama I think I'd ever seen in the hobby, was the sort of street scene that you created with the speeder bike. And I was like, no way. I'm like, I didn't even know that was a possibility, you know? And then my wife's like, why is there, you know, $350 missing from our checking account? And I'm like, I had to buy all this foam because this guy in England making these Tatooine scenes and the bike's actually floating and the guy could lean against it all cool looking, you know? But she bought into it too. I mean, like, she got me the Mandalorian speeder bike for Christmas. Wasn't expecting it at all, you know? It was a huge deal for me. So, but yeah, you know, it's just, I think, yeah, that was the first one I had seen. And that kind of led me down the rabbit hole. And that's when I started seeing your YouTube videos and the Instagram page. And then, you know, it's just like, I just try my own stuff. And when I kind of get stuck or I run out of inspiration, that's more when I'll go to, you know, the internet and see what other people have done, and just kind of the process and techniques that they use.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I don't have enough time to do it for myself anymore. It seems like I build stuff for stuff I want to use myself. So I'll make stuff and design it and make sure that, you know, like the Max Rebo and things, it's like, we wanted to do that because there was some interest for it. But I wanted to do it for me.
Right.
You know, and I had pleasure painting that one up, you know.
Cool.
But, you know, it's sat on the shelf at the moment, along with half of the, you know, technical consoles and things like that.
Right.
So, you know, it's just like, but I'll dig those consoles out when I want to do a photograph and, you know, kind of, you know, so they'll be useful for the product shots. But it's like, you know, some of the stuff, as I say, you know, other people like, you know, say Trooper Nerd is photographing some, you know, some of the heads for us, because he's got the skill and he's also got some of the figures and some of the costumes, whereas I don't necessarily have some of that.
Right. It's good to have a partner. Yeah, it's definitely good to have a partner like that. And I feel like you can probably bounce ideas off of one another as well.
Well, we're lucky in that we do the school run every day and our wives are just like, oh god, you're doing a geek run again, you know. It's get rid of the kids at school and we can talk, you know.
Right. Yeah, like, no, that's so cool. I'm a bit jealous of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually really cool. And you both offset skill wise, you know, like you have the detail oriented paint and, you know, creation of the sculpts and things like that. And he comes in with the ability to do the photographs and the editing and the design work. And I think that that's,
Well, he does some of the sculpts as well, because he's in the
industry. Okay.
Yeah. So he's in the game side of things, but you know, he's ex ILM as well. So he specializes in lighting. So he's one of the lighting engineers there and stuff, but he's very much digital, but he's got the photography skills, and you've seen his work. It's superb.
Yeah.
You know, and like everyone else, he shows the background stuff, you know, he shows the setup of how he's
right. done it.
You know, and I, you know, he doesn't have a special studio. I know what he does, you know, and he's doing it like you in a little tiny room.
That makes me feel much better.
Yeah. But the stuff he achieves, he's doing mainly figure work and stuff, whereas he's not doing big dio. So, mm-hmm. you know, whenever we've done the big dio, you know, he's come here and we've had to set up here and, you know, use the lighting in the house or whatever in the garden. Mm-hmm. But I could never do what he does. You know, I don't know how he sets the camera up. I don't know how he just right. lights it in such a way that he gets a perfect shot. You know, I take it with my phone, or as you say, with a camera, and I go,
yeah,
that'll do for me. You know,
yeah. My process is a little more in depth than that. With photos, like I said, I do have somewhat of a background, like an amateur background, obviously, but, you know, it's I lack in like the expertise for, you know, creating like a head sculpt or like, you know, there's tons of custom figure work out there. I'm just like, how did you do this? Like, how did you manage to take an ordinary store-bought action figure and other pieces of store-bought action figures and also parts that you made to scale? Mm-hmm. And create something that, again, does not exist as we know it in Star Wars canon, but looks like it should, right? And it's just unbelievable to me. It's inspiring.
Yeah,
it's cool.
I mean, I as I say, I've got boxes and boxes of stuff that is just failed prints or wrong scale,
right?
So actually, these guys, I can't remember the name of Gargaflex. I think it is not that, but it's the four-eyed guy.
Right.
I mean, these were printed originally at 1/10 scale instead of 1/12. So they were slightly larger, you know, and the pike heads that we've just done.
Right.
Again, cool. You know, whoops, he drops that. There's a fault in the file, so it didn't print well. So I've just printed out another batch today, you know, whereas the Tusken Raider, that's the wrong scale. You know, when I got it and I looked at it and it's like, it's about 2 mil too big,
mm-hmm.
but the 2 millimeters makes a huge difference.
Right.
You know, you could notice that it's the wrong size. So
right.
I've got boxes of stuff where it's failed, but when I get it right, I know then I can, you know, kind of be comfortable because I've got the toy, I've taken the head off, you know, and I've put the head on it and I go, yeah.
You have no choice but to be comfortable at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So there is a level of investment I have to make in terms of the toys right. when we're doing a new thing. But I mean, that for me means that I can then be comfortable in saying this head is right because it's been detailed by us. But at the same time, the print size is the right as well, you know, so.
Right. I apologize. My wife was texting me.
That's right.
Okay. Yep.
So, you know, I love to kind of understand how people are using it in context, why the, you know, like you bought the piece and why now I can see it in place. And it's like,
right.
Yeah. You know, we see the picture on Instagram and that's one thing, but you know, at the end of the day, it's like, I bought it because I went to see Galaxy Edge and I saw it. Oh, yeah. Can I? And you know, and then to find somebody making it is like, for me, that closes the loop, right? You know, mm-hmm. it makes me happy because it's like, you know, we're not just doing it because of we wanted to just put something out there. It's like people are using it because they want to recreate Galaxy's Edge.
Oh yeah.
The same with the Batuu door, right? You know, we've kind of spent, you know, a lot of time and effort making that.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, it's fantastic because now somebody can recreate that Batuu door.
I know.
And have fun with it as they see fit. So,
yeah. And I mean, that's really what it comes down to is it's only going to be a hobby if it remains fun. And, you know, someone like yourself, where there's you know, sort of a retail side, you know, I don't know how that really works, right? Like, I don't intend on necessarily selling anything because I can't produce much here, you know, like I'm limited in space and time. So it's, you know, if somebody ever wanted to buy one of my dioramas, I'd probably sell that. My wife would be happy. But yeah, if for me, it's got to remain fun. And there are points where, like recently working on the tie, where I feel as though I'm like losing inspiration a little bit. And I kind of second guess the hobby. I'm like, you've got all this stuff in your house, all these figures on your shelf, all this stuff in your office. Do something with it, right? But then I remember I'm also in the middle of painting this thing up, which, you know, some acrylic paint is better than others. The acrylic paint I'm using currently is not. But that is taking my time. And once that's done, I can move on to the next project. And what that is, it may be the bounty hunter thing, or it may just be a series of shoots that I do, you know, based on characters that I've collected while I was working on the TIE Fighter, pre-orders that come in, right? Like things
Well, I mean, Tom, it's been fantastic to talk to you.
Yeah, you as
know,
well.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, sure. It's been really, you know, insightful to kind of understand a bit more about what you're doing and, you know, cool. How you've got into it. But, you know, it's just, your work's fantastic. So what I'm going to do is I'll make sure all your Instagram stuff is on the video afterwards and things, but kind of, you know, do appreciate all the time you spent. So
yeah, absolutely, Neil, take care. I hope to talk to you again soon.
All right,
take care.